Good evening all. So I thought we would spend some time speaking about a topic that was a little bit less controversial than some of our others. It's nice to have a big crowd though, and God willing, more in the future, even for the more parv topics, but they're still equally exciting in the world of halacha. So we've spent a lot of time over the last couple of days. We had a big mikvah launch for those of you who are not in town. We had a big mikvah launch here in Beth Shalom of the Rabbi Shaya Kalimnik Kalim Mikvah. It really is a mouthful. We've got to like summarize that somehow, like RSY, all right, whatever, figure out. RSK? Okay, we'll figure out another time how to make it not as much of a mouthful. But we did launch the new Kalim Mikveh here in Beth Shalom this just yesterday, and now anyone in Rochester can use a Kalim Mikveh 24/6, and it's very exciting. But it's worthwhile to spend some time actually trying to understand what the mitzvah of Tevilas Kalim is all about. For those of you who were here yesterday, you did get a little bit of a sense, but there was kind of a lot going on, and you may or may not have heard every last word that was said. So what I want to do this evening is what I call the modern applications of Tevilas Kalim. Understand from the beginning of the sources really where the mitzvah actually comes from. Understand how we get to where we are today. And then understand what exactly I need to be doing with my dishes. What needs to be tovel and what doesn't. And case in point, a person walked into the shul yesterday after the program and was all excited to tovel their kalim. They brought a little basket of a few dishes and they said, "Okay, Rabbi, can you show me where the mikveh is? I'd love to tovel my kalim." And I looked at them, I said, "What are these made out of?" And they said, it was like ceramic or china. I said, "You do not need to tovel these kalim." So it's certainly worthwhile to have an understanding of what exactly needs to be toveled, so we don't have to drive ourselves totally crazy, and that we should be in the know of what exactly it applies to. So the entire sugi really begins with source number one. There is a verse that we have towards the end of the book of Bamidbar that kol davar asher yavo ba'ish ta'aviru ba'ish, that there was this big battle with Midian, and we had all of this booty, all of these spoils of war from this battle, and there was this understanding that all of the vessels, we were allowed to take the vessels from this other nation, but all of the vessels that we acquired, we had to we had to put through fire, right? Why would we put them through fire? What was that about? Koshering, and nothing to do with Tevilas Kalim. It was all about koshering them because they obviously ate unkosher food on their kalim, v'taher, and you have to purify them. We'll see what that means in a second. Ach b'meinida, just like we have with the meinida, yischata v'chol asher lo yavo ba'ish taviru b'mayim, and anything that does not have the ability to be koshered through fire should then just be koshered through water. And that's all the verse is talking, but this has nothing to do with Tevilas Kalim, and everything to do with koshering the dishes that we took from Midian after the war that obviously were treif, and we wanted to make them kosher. It seems that the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, in source number 2, takes this verse and tries to pull out what we refer to nowadays as Tevilas Kalim, right? So there's Hechshra Kalim or Hagalas Kalim, which is koshering. That is the black and white understanding of what the verse is referring to. That is not at all what we're talking about when we say Tevilas Kalim. If you have a unkosher pot, whether you made it unkosher accidentally or you got it from someone who doesn't keep kosher and you want to make it kosher, that has nothing to do with Tevilas Kalim, right? It's not impure. You don't have to purify it. Maybe what you have to do is you have to make it kosher, which is a process of either putting it in a fire or boiling water, something of the like. Tevilas Kalim is just literally you have this hole in the ground and there is a collection of rainwater. It is not easy to collect rainwater, we learned, but we did collect rainwater and it was very exciting after the rainwater did come. It has to be collected in a certain way. And once you have the rainwater, you have to purify the vessel. So where does this come from? So take a look inside. The Gemara explains in source number 2, one who purchases cooking utensils from the Gentiles must prepare them for use by Jews in the following manner. With regard to those utensils whose manner of preparation is to immerse them in a ritual bath, as they require no further preparation, he must immerse them accordingly. With regard to those utensils whose manner of preparation is to purge them with boiling water, etc., etc. Skip a few lines to the Gemara, that was the Mishnah. The sages taught, and they all require immersion in 40 seah of water. Right, so 40 seah of water is approximately a few dozen gallons. That's really what it is. It's not that much. Including utensils that must first be purged in boiling water or heated until white hot, right? So again, you go to the store, you buy a pot. The pot from the store is totally unused. It does not need to be koshered. It is neutral. But what needs to happen is that we need to actually tovel it to, quote-unquote, purify it. So what is that about? So Rava says, it is derived from that which the verse states with regard to utensils captured in the battle against the Midianites, that by stating, skip to the next bold statement, and it shall be pure, the verse added to the process another required act of purification in addition to the heating the utensil with the fire. So the whole entire sugya of Tevilas Kelim, saying that we have this obligation to immerse our vessels in this 40 seya, in these several gallons of rainwater, is a one extra word in the Torah, and that is the word vitaher, that we have to purify them. There is this understanding by our rabbis that because the Torah goes out of its way to express this additional word over here that seems to be unnecessary, it must be that not only did they kosher the kelim, but they also purified the kelim. And the rabbis understood that purifying meant putting it in a mikveh. Now, based on everything we've said thus far, would you say that this is a rabbinic commandment or a Torah commandment? Some say rabbinic. Anyone say Torah?
I think it's going to be one of those where the rabbis say, this is from the Torah.
Okay, so Melissa says...
Effectively Torah.
Torah, okay. So Melissa says Torah. Jan Zoom, what do you say? Someone said something? Torah?
Torah.
Okay, good. Sam says Torah. Any other thoughts here? Torah?
It's Torah.
Torah?
I'm voting rabbinic.
Okay. Jim, for your sake, whatever Ann says, that's what you choose.
Either way.
Right, so the truth is you're all correct. There is a machlokas, of course, as to whether this is a rabbinic or a Torah commandment. In source number 3, Rashi on the Gemara says that what is the Gemara telling us over here? Vitahir, the word to purify, is krayaserahu hai vitahir. The Rashi says that the verse is giving us this extra word, and by definition, our rabbis are defining that word for us, which basically means our rabbis are the ones teaching us how to understand the verse, but it's not the rabbis teaching us the halacha, it is the Torah teaching us the halacha through our rabbi's interpretation. That is called a deoraisa, that is called a Torah-given law. However, the Rambam does not seem to see it in that way. If you take a look at source number 4, we'll read it in Hebrew, but the English is there as well. Tvila zo shemat bilin, so the immersion that we have to do with our vessels is kli ha-su'uda. So, by the way, this is a really important fact to just be aware of. The only vessels that need to be toveled are those that are actually going to be interacting with food, right? So what's a good example of something that's not interacting with food but is used in the kitchen?
Like a cooling rack that you would put a dish on top. It looks like a trivet or something like that.
Okay, good. So like you have a nice metal trivet where you put your pot on after it's on the fire. So that does not need to be toveled at all, even though it's used in the kitchen, because there is no food that ever really comes into contact with that. Or maybe like a dish drain or things like that. These types of things do not need to be toveled because they do not come into contact with food. Only the items that come into contact with food will need to be toveled. And so continuing in the Rambam, so klei seuda hanelkachem min ha'akum, it's specifically the vessels that we purchase from non-Jews, right? So this is, I think, where it gets a little bit confusing, because the halacha of Tevilas Kelim only applies to an individual who purchases the vessel from a non-Jewish person. However, if you purchase it from a Jewish person and it was made by a Jewish person, there is no obligation to tovel the kli, which makes it sound a lot like koshering, right? Because what does it have to do with a Jewish person or a non-Jewish person if this is not a kosher thing, it's a quote-unquote purification thing? So how are we to actually make sense of this? And so we'll have to try to flesh that out a little bit further, why it is that it's so critical that this has to come from a non-Jewish person and that's what requires to be less kelim, whereas if you purchase it from a Jewish person, it does not require to be less kelim. I have some like faces looking at me angry. Everyone okay so far? Everyone understand what I'm saying?
What happens in a case of gifts, if you're given something by a non-Jewish person,
So nowadays it's a little bit easier, for better or for worse, since more often than not, I would say 99.9% of the time, we are being given a. It has nothing to do with the person who owns it as much as it has to do with the person who created it. So usually 99.9% of the time, the person who created it is not your lovely Jewish or non-Jewish friend. It is Hamilton Beach, or it is you fill in the blank company. And so the answer is that whichever company made it, if you can assume that it was a Jewish person, you wouldn't have to tovel it. If you cannot assume it's a Jewish person, you would have to tovel it. I.e., anything that usually is made in Israel, more often than not, you can assume, there are some exceptions, but in general, you could assume does not need to be tovel because of the high majority of Jewish individuals in the land of Israel. However, it happens to be that there have been a few specific companies that I've asked over the years, and they've all, from Israel, they've all told me to tovel whatever I have, like Emmanuel, for example. People know Emmanuel from Israel. I reached out to them. They told me, absolutely, you have to tovel it. So I don't know if there's like a rabbi there telling them that, or if it's just some guy who doesn't know anything, you just said, yeah, tovel it, why not? FYI, it's interesting. Okay, yeah.
But what about things like small appliances that they tell you not to submerge?
Okay, good. So this is something that came up yesterday, and we'll speak a bit about it towards the end, right? So I had a Rebbe many years ago who said that, you know, there are some things that you can tovel, and some things that you should tovel maybe, but you can't really tovel them. For example, so there's two types of electrical appliances nowadays. There is like the water urn, which is a pretty simple appliance. It's really just like a metal pot with a coil at the bottom. So as Rabbi Mamon explained yesterday, as long as the coil dries, it's and it will dry within 24, 48 hours, it really seems to be totally okay. So usually it's recommended to definitely to tovel that and let it dry for a couple of days. Don't plug it in because you will break it if it is still wet. But after a few days, it's you know, you're good to go. However, certainly there are other modern day appliances that, again, my Rebbe from a number of years ago once said, it's like toveling a laptop, right? So like, imagine like toveling a Keurig, right? So first of all, it happens to be that a Keurig machine is 99% made of plastic. Happens to be the one element of the machine that is made of metal is the one that actually interacts with the coffee itself, which we'll talk about that towards the end. You can't tovel a Keurig machine. It really is. You will absolutely break it because it's just not made suitable to go into water, and it is much more complex than just a basic water urn. And the appliances really go on from there. I remember when we first got married, so I didn't know as much back then, and I know only a little bit more now. And we got this bread maker, so I said, "Oh, I guess we should tovel it." So. I'm standing in front of the Kalim Mikveh. This was in Teaneck, and I have this, you know, you guys know a bread maker, right? It's a big machine. It's not a small thing. So I'm standing there holding this big thing about to dunk it in the water, and Baruch Hashem, I had some sort of divine inspiration in that moment, and I realized this probably was not the right thing to do, and I did not do it. It happens to be that bread maker lasted for a number of years. It just broke a few weeks ago, and now we have a new bread maker that we were able to use because there are elements that do have to be toveled in it. We'll talk about that at the end as well, if you would like. But we were able to tovel them in the Rabbi Shaya Klimnik Kelim Mikveh. But do not tovel the whole thing. That would be bad. Okay, great. So there are certain electric appliances that you should tovel, some that you shouldn't. We'll talk about that towards the end. Back to our...
If
flesh out your question a little bit more. What do you mean?
Electronic.
Right, meaning technically there's no reason why the actual object should not have to be toveled. However, because of the fact that you will break it when it goes in the water, so the poskim have become very lenient for a number of different circumstances, and we'll explain their leniencies as we get to the end. But it's a fair point. Technically, if you would take out the chip, then 100% everyone would agree that you should tovel this. It's only because you will actually break it, then it will then become useless, that the post can say, okay, we have to find leniencies over here to figure out how we can get away with not toveling it. Okay, so back to the discussion immediately at hand. Is it rabbinic or is it from the Torah? So Rashi again says that it seems to be a Torah commandment, but the Rambam says that it's specifically most likely a rabbinic commandment. How do we know that? Because he says, excuse me, Right, so you have your kelim, and you should only tova the kelim that are from the non-Jewish people. V'achar kach yutaru la'achila, and then you could eat it. U'shtia einan le'inyan tumah v'tahara ela medivrei sofrim. He says, don't think for a moment that there is any real significance to understanding the inner workings of purity and impurity. That's not what this is about. He says, this is medivrei sofrim. This is a rabbinic commandment, and they learn it from perhaps what we might refer to as an asmachta. It's some sort of a Torah source, but really this is just an idea that our rabbis tell us. I see a chat over here. Okay, good. So does water alone constitute a food? Black and white, the answer is yes, it does. But we'll get to those types of things at the end as well. Okay, so according to this Rambam, it would seem to be a rabbinic commandment. However, for those of you who have any familiarity with Jewish texts, and specifically with the Rambam's texts, you will know that it's actually not so black and white, according to everyone, even what the Rambam holds. So again, to pause for a moment, everyone agrees that Rashi says that it's a Torah commandment. The Rambam seems to say it's a rabbinic commandment. However, there are those who are so bothered by that, where would the Rambam get off by saying this is a rabbinic commandment? No one has ever said it's a rabbinic commandment. So there are those who try to reinterpret the Rambam actually to say it's a Torah commandment, but he is known as the one who holds it is a rabbinic commandment regardless. Okay, with that said, people sometimes get very nitpicky. Is it a Torah commandment? Is it a rabbinic commandment? There is no real practical application as a difference. If the rabbis told us or God told us, so it's one and the same essentially for our purposes, you have to do it just as much. The one difference between a rabbinic commandment and a Torah commandment is that in a case of doubt, then we can always be more lenient. So that what that would mean is, if the entire topic of Tevilas Kelim is a rabbinic construct, then if there was ever a doubt as to whether or not I would need to tovel something, then we could always be lenient and assume that I wouldn't. I.e., going to our fast forwarding a little bit to electrical appliances, right? So if there is a slight doubt, maybe God would not want me to tovel my laptop. And again, just to clarify, not actually a laptop, but my appliance that looks like a laptop. And so maybe because of the slight doubt there, if we would assume it's a rabbinic commandment, maybe we should just assume that we don't have to do it because of the slight doubt involved in that circumstance. Okay. With all of this said, again, at the end of the day, we do follow this, whether it is rabbinic or Torah given. What is this actually all about, right? So if it's not really about purity, if it's not really about impurity, if it's not about kashrus, what is the actual commandment here for? And especially since it only applies to an appliance or to a dish that is made by someone who is not Jewish, as opposed to if I have a plate that was made by someone who is Jewish, I wouldn't have to tovel it. How do we make sense of this exactly? So as a general rule, we don't like giving reasons for mitzvot. However, this is like one of those really odd ones that just doesn't, it has so many inconsistencies built into it that I personally find this to be a more troubling mitzvah and worthwhile of understanding more than perhaps some others out there. So if you take a look, there is a statement by the Gemara in the Yerushalmi in source number 5, and it's worthwhile to dissect this for a moment because the language itself is pretty simple, but I think it's getting at a much deeper point. The Yerushalmi explains, Sarich lahat bil lefi sheyatsu Tumas Hagoy, v'nechnasu l'kedushas Yisrael. So the simple meaning, we'll translate it, but then we'll try to understand it better, is that you need to be tovel, you need to immerse your kelim into a mikvah if it was owned by someone who was not Jewish, because it is going from the impurity of the other nations into the holiness of the Jewish nation. And so again, this is a pretty loaded statement here, but what I think that the Gemara is talking about is an understanding that, God forbid, this is not meant to put down the other nations of the world, but what it is meant to do is it's meant to raise up the Jewish nation, that every single thing that we do, every single mitzvah, every commandment that we follow is meant to be a little bit holier, a little bit more pure, a little bit more connected to God as much as possible in our lives. And therefore, perhaps what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that the reason why we have to tovel it, it's not not like necessarily that there is actually a real physical change in my kli, but rather it's more about a recognition for myself to understand that everything we do is that we have this idea that we say every single day in davening, v'hivdi lanu minatoim, that God separated us from the rest of the elements of the world, from the rest of the nations, that we are loftier in a sense, and we hold ourselves up to a higher authority. And so God forbid, again, not to say that the other nations are impure, but that we hold ourselves up to a much higher level of purity and holiness, and therefore it's worthwhile to have, when it comes to vessels that we will use for the preparation of our foods, that will go into our bodies, that also will then impact who we are as people, it's worthwhile making sure that these vessels are in a higher, more pure level. The obvious question is that there are many Jewish people who are unfortunately, or let's say not many, there are some Jewish people out there who maybe are not the finest of individuals, and if they make a vessel, I would not have to tovel it, as opposed to someone who is not Jewish, who might be a very fine individual, and so why is that less pure? So that's kind of where this theory doesn't really get off the ground, and it's not the strongest of constructs and reasonings, but I think that certainly at the base level, we could understand and hopefully connect to a little bit, realize that it's all about just holding ourselves to this higher standard. Okay, good so far? Yeah. Okay, with that said, I'd like to pose a question to the crowd, and that is, let's say I'm eating food, and the food is totally kosher, but my delicious kosher food happens to be that it's on a metal plate, and I know that this metal plate was not toveled in a mikveh.
It's your plate or it's someone else's?
It's my plate, let's say, okay, for right now. So what is the status of this kosher food on this plate that was not toveled? What happens to the food? What would you logically say?
It doesn't change. The food's still kosher.
Why?
Is it a new plate or a used plate?
It's a new plate, but it has not been brought to the mikveh. Again, it is prohibited technically to use this plate.
The mikveh doesn't render the plate kosher.
So what does it do?
It's purity or something, whatever, but some of the facts say it's still kosher.
But again, so if we're obligated to put it in a mikveh, and we can't use the plate before we put it in the mikveh, so if I do use the plate before I put it in the mikveh, so how could it be that it doesn't impact the food at all? It just seems to be...
Like maybe that you're supposed to do it, so you're still doing something wrong, but the food is still kosher.
Okay. Anyone? No, it could be.
Can I give that food to somebody else? It's not their plate.
Okay, good. All right. Could you give the food to someone else? Good. And so this becomes a really good question, because there are plenty of well-meaning people out there who kosher, of course they keep kosher without a shadow of a doubt, but tevilas kelim, you know, putting my dish in a hole with water, that's more of a foreign concept to them. So there are people out there who keep kosher 100%, but they may not necessarily be so strict or as aware of if they should be toveling all of their kelim. So I go to their house, and again, a Jewish person, kosher food, and they have that plate that should be toveled, but it wasn't. So can I eat on it? All right, but you're very close with them. You're not close enough to tell them to recommend to go to the Rabbi Shaya Kelim Mikveh, but you're close enough to eat at their house. Can you eat on that plate?
Yes.
Yeah? Wow. Really? No one has any issues with it? Wow.
Well, if the food is still kosher.
Is it?
Or a paper plate.
Yeah, that won't offend anyone. okay, so it happens to be you are all correct. The food is totally okay, and if you would find yourself in this circumstance, then you could partake of the food. However, it really begs the question as to why this would be the case. Why should the kli, that again, everything we know about vessels interacting with food is all within this mindset and scope of kosher or not kosher, right? So the notion of if I have a plate that's kosher, but it's not purified, so naturally, maybe it's just because I've learned too much Gemara, you know, in my day. But naturally, you'd assume that there has to be something tainted with the plate, and that it should taint the food. And so, even though it doesn't, we have to understand this a little bit better. So, take a look inside in source number 6, the Shulchan Aruch, how the Shulchan Aruch formulates this lehalacha. There is let's take a look inside. One who borrows or rents a vessel from an idol worshiper, and again, idol worshiper is just code for non-Jew, because back in the day, most non-Jews were just idol worshippers. So you borrow or rent a vessel from a non-Jewish person, does not need to be immersed in the mikveh. Why not?
It's not yours.
Good, because it's not yours. The commandment to tovel a mikveh, to tovel a kli, only applies to if I am the owner of it. But if someone else owns it, I am not. If a non-Jewish person owns it, I am not obligated to tovel it. What? How can we use that perhaps as a leniency?
Brand new dishes, and they
cashed
all the pots and pans. I have no idea if they took it to the mikveh.
Okay, good. Right, so there is, and so therefore, what? How can you use this that we just learned as a leniency for that case?
Because they weren't ours.
Okay, good. Good, because they do not belong to you. They belong to the convention center. They belong to perhaps most likely non-Jewish individuals. So therefore, there would be no obligation to tovel them. More than that, there are some poskim who suggest that if you are in a bind, and perhaps in a city in a city like Rochester, pre the Rabbi Shaya Kalibni, you can see I'm trying to really push this thing. If you pre the times where it was easy to go to a Kalim mikvah, so you, and again, let's say 10 minutes before Shabbos, you realize you have this beautiful new glass salad bowl that does need to be toveled. So what are you supposed to do if you can't tovel it, if there's no options or opportunities? So there are some poskim who say, in a pinch, all you got to do is very simple. You knock on your non-Jewish neighbor's door, you say, hey, would you like a bowl? Wink. Right? And so they take it, and they say, thank you. And you say, hey, can I borrow your bowl? And they say, yes, you can. And so now you have borrowed a bowl from a non-Jewish person, and you can then get away with not toveling it. This is not something that should be relied on by any stretch of the imagination on a regular basis. But in a pinch, it is something that the poskim do suggest. So let's keep going further. But
comments.
Yeah, comments. Because...
Ooh. You have to get rid of your chametz.
Okay.
You have to get rid of your chametz, so you sell it, and it goes off to some non-Jewish person, and end of the chag, bingo, bango, it's yours again.
Sort of.
It's a little different. Also, this is actually a good trivia question. When you're selling your chametz on Pesach, are you selling your chametz dishes as well?
No.
Why not? It's chametz. What do you mean? There's everything we know about kashrus. It's ingrained in actual. It is food though. It is.
Don't give
me. Come on.
Yeah, why would you change over dishes and make a lot of work for me if it's not
stuck? So you're saying the dishes are chametz stick. So that means you are selling the dishes. Chas v'shalom, no one should be selling their dishes on Pesach. You shouldn't use them. But the biggest proof of not selling the dishes is because who takes ownership of my chametz on Pesach? The non-Jewish person. And what happens if I buy all my dishes back from the non-Jewish person after Pesach? I would have to tovel all my dishes again. So don't, God forbid, no one is selling their dishes on Pesach. You can't use the dishes on Pesach. Sorry?
Is it because the chametz not be'in?
Right. So the question is, because there's no like real substance, and therefore what?
Would that be why we're not selling them? You only have to sell chametz.
Yeah, there's an understanding. Yeah, it could... Theoretically, you can say that maybe you are selling any microscopic grains of chametz that might be on the plate. I always had this question. Let's say we've all had people in our homes, maybe even us ourselves, when we wash our dishes, it doesn't always come clean, you know, perfectly. And let's say you clean that dish. This is not at all related to tefillah skill. But let's say you clean that dish, and there's a little bit of chametz left on it, and you don't realize it, but you put it away. And so maybe you should sell that dish for Pesach. No, so the answer is you sold, if anything, you sold that little crumb of chametz that was on it, but you didn't sell the dish. Okay, let's go. We're getting way too off topic. We'll talk about Pesach. How far away is Pesach? Pesach is in?
Not far.
A few months, not too far away. A few months. Okay, so we'll talk about that as we get closer. Okay, so let's keep going. We're still in source number six. So you rent or borrow this vessel from a non-Jewish person, no need to immerse it. But if an Israelite acquires it from a non-Jewish person and lends it to a friend, it does require to be immersed. So again, I am a Jewish person and I acquire something from a non-Jewish person, even if I now, as the Jewish person, give it to another Jewish person, it still needs to be immersed because it was originally from a non-Jewish person. Yeah? That's clear? Everyone understand that?
I think you got a good point up there from Nina Shore.
Because it is worse to insult or embarrass your host than it is to eat off a plate that has not been tovled. So I agree with that 100%. The question is, so how far would you take this idea of insulting? Meaning, let's say your lovely host, who you thought keeps kosher, also serves you, bacon, crispy bacon. So would you eat that bacon? What?
You don't need to eat the bacon. You can eat the kosher food off the
non-tuffled dish. Let's pause for a second. If we all agree, Judaism says the prohibition to eat bacon. So, and if there's anything else on the plate with the bacon, probably shouldn't eat that either. Definitely shouldn't eat that either. So why is that any different than, theoretically, the food that might be touching this non-Torah plate, if that also is a Torah commandment?
There's a different understanding even amongst non-Jews about the known prescription of bacon versus the totally unknown issue of tefillah's
kiddush. Right.
Does Nina give you an answer?
No, because it's worse to violate a biblical commandment than it is to insult or embarrass. It's worse to violate. But if. Okay, so you're making good points, and at the end of the day, we 100% agree. So I'm going to stop playing devil's advocate. Yes, we agree at the end of the day. Okay, so let's keep going further. Yeah.
We're out of town, and it's kosher is such a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, you go to Queens, and everybody eats from everybody.
Yeah.
So can one take it to the point here? Well, if this person doesn't care of my Jewish friend, doesn't care or doesn't know the title of his Caleb, so maybe there's not so much about Patrick's either.
Right, so I mean, at the end of the day, that's a dangerous statement to make. Certainly, you know, as a generalization, to say that this person doesn't know about X, that means they don't know about anything. There are a lot of things that a lot of people don't know about, including a lot of very frum Jews who we would maybe never, you know, even think twice about, eating in their homes, and they probably don't know lots of different things. I've experienced it myself. I've eaten not in this community, in other communities with the frumest of the frum people. You sit there and you see they're just blatantly violating a Torah commandment, not because they're bad people, not because they're not from, but because they didn't learn that element of the Shulchan Aruch. Not everyone is an absolute expert in all Judaism. And so I always hesitate to say that if a person's not an expert in this, that means they're not an expert in anything, including kashrus, because again, it really is like the slippery slope of saying that no one should be trustworthy. By the way, there are some people who say that no one is trustworthy, and there are people who will never eat outside of their homes, and whoever does the cooking in that house, I'm sure, really appreciates that perspective. At the end of the day, I wouldn't jump the gun on that level necessarily. Okay, so we're still on source number six here. Okay, so, right, so again, non-Jewish person, you buy it from a non-Jewish person, has to be toveled. If you rent it or borrow, doesn't need to be toveled. And there are those who say that if the first person did not take it for the purpose of a meal, rather only for cutting parchments and the like, then he is not required to tovel it, right? So let's say, what's a good example of a multi-purpose kitchen utensil that does need to be toveled that could very likely be used for no food whatsoever?
Knife.
Okay, I was thinking even more. Like a scissors, right? Yeah, everyone has like those like fancy scissors that come in the knife block, right? And people, yeah.
Poultry
so,
shears.
What are they?
Those are poultry shears.
Poultry shears? I call them the scissors.
Yeah.
whatever they're called, poultry shears, right? So they could also just as much be used to do an arts and crafts project. And so maybe you would say, since I can use them for an arts and crafts project, they do not need to be tovled. The answer is, it really depends on what you're planning on using them for. If you are like me and you know nothing about most kitchen utensils, and you see poultry shears, you think, oh, these are scissors, and then you use them for the rest of your life just to do arts and crafts, you never have to tovle them. However, if you are an individual who at least has some knowledge about some of these things, and you understand that they're going to stay in your kitchen and you might have a multi-purpose use, if they're going to be used for food, then absolutely you should go ahead and tovel them. Okay, so let's keep going further. Now the gloss, that's the Ramah, but it is forbidden for the first person to use it for the needs of a meal, even on a temporary basis, right? So this is a really important ruling that most people are not aware of. I don't know where, sometimes, you know, there are these like assumptions in our community, not our community, but like the general Orthodox community, that you don't know where they come from. It's like I have a friend who's a comedian, an Orthodox comedian, and he has what's called the Jewish 5-second rule, right? So there's the regular 5-second rule that we all know, that you drop something on the floor, 5 seconds, you can still eat it because it's not dirty, right? Then there's the Jewish 5-second rule. You go into the bathroom on Shabbos, you turn the light on, or you're like, or you turn the light off, you're like, oh no, 5-second rule, you turn it right back on again, as if like you haven't violated any prohibition. No, you violated 2 prohibitions now, all right? And so that is the same thing. So that is the same thing. Whoa. Who? What's happening?
Someone's trying to speak.
Who's trying to speak?
No, it sounded like an echo. Somebody must have their mic.
Okay. Okay. Someone want to say something? No? Okay. All right. So that is the same thing as what we are about to see now, what we just saw in the Ramah. Because there are some who think that, no, I do need to tovel my kelim, but I only need to tovel them after I'm using them for a while. So some people think, oh, you go on vacation, and you know, you don't want to schlep your expensive, your nice dishes, your nice pots and pans, but you know you're going to need 1 or 2 pots or pans on the vacation. You have a nice little kitchenette in your hotel room, so you go to the store, you buy a $5 pan, $5 pot, and you say, it's a one-time use, why should I have to, just temporary, don't need to tovel it? Absolutely not. You have to tovel it, even for the very first use. There is no way that you should not be toveling it. Again, if you are in a pinch, there are these leniencies to say, maybe lend it to a non-Jewish person or give it and then borrow back. But as a general rule, you own it, even the first time it does have to be tovel. Okay, so with that said, let's keep going a little bit further. All right, so let's say we do find ourselves in this circumstance that we were talking about a moment ago, in the home of a Jewish person who is really well-meaning and they're serving us food, and we're not sure if they toveled their dishes. So should we assume that they were toveled without any prior knowledge? We don't know any better. Or should we assume, not judge them meritoriously and assume maybe they're not toveled and then maybe have a potential issue? What should our general working belief be when we are eating in someone's home?
Assume all is good.
Right. So absolutely. Assuming this person is a regular from Jew, they keep as much as they do everything they're supposed to do. They may not know everything they're supposed to do, but they do everything they're supposed to do that they know. So there's no reason you shouldn't assume that they are not that their dishes are not tovel. But take a look at source number 7. So Tosfot on the Gemara that we started with explains that Omer Rabbeinu Shmuel Yisrael Sheshal Kli Yisrael Chaveru Shekana Meiver Kachavim. Right, so if you find yourself in a situation where a Jewish person, it gets get complicated now, a Jewish person acquires a vessel from a non-Jewish person, but it was originally... you find yourself in a situation where a Jewish person acquires the vessel from another Jewish person, but it was originally acquired from a non-Jewish person, so you do need to tovel that. You don't need to tovel the kli in a situation where the original owner and creator of the vessel was Jewish. And so if you take a look at source number 8, so Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very a pretty big leniency over here. He says as follows, we'll read it in the Hebrew and translate it in the English, Va'ochel b'malon, hotel, someone who eats in a hotel, or b'mesada, or in a restaurant, v'chadome, she'ein tovlin kleihem, where they did not tovel their vessels, v'nasnu lefanav chatichos basar, and someone placed in front of you a delicious piece of meat, v'chadome, and this was put in front of you, agave kli matechos or zuchuchos, it was placed in front of you on a vessel that does need to be tovelled, but you know that it wasn't tovelled. Ve'einan srichos le'etzem akli, ve'einan mishtamshim bo le'tzorech achila, af shegam kli shemishtamshim bo le'dvarim yivishim him gam ki nechshavim kli suda v'tzorech antvila. So he says, you're in this bind. You need to tovel this kli. You know it wasn't tovelled. Your food cannot technically be partaken. If it's on it, again, you're not going to embarrass anyone because this is in a restaurant or in a hotel where, you know, maybe you'll embarrass the owner of the hotel, but we're not as concerned about that. Since you're in this circumstance where, again, you know the vessel wasn't toveled, and technically you don't actually need the plate, right? We're very civilized people, and so we eat on dishes and we use silverware. But let's say I'm served my falafel pita, or I'm served my brisket, a corned beef sandwich. It comes on a state-of-the-art, gorgeous metal plate. So do I need that metal plate? I don't need that metal plate. I could eat on the table. I wouldn't. My mom always told me it's not appropriate to eat off the table like that. But technically, it is permissible. So Rav Moshe says, "B'shas dechak lito misham biyadayim." Take it off the plate. You're now holding it in your hands. Obed davar she'ein tzrich tefila, or you take the you have nice metal silverware here, but you take the plastic fork that obviously doesn't need tefila, and now that it is off the plate, it is totally permissible to be eaten. There's no prohibition involved over here, and then you are allowed to eat it. So this is known as a very major leniency from Moshe Feinstein. If you were not aware of tefilas kelim, and you were not aware of the sensitivities involved over here, you can see people doing this all the time and not even realizing that they're following the leniency of Rav Moshe Feinstein. But it is a major leniency nonetheless for those of us who are now are more informed and more aware that if we do find ourselves in a circumstance where the kli is not necessarily tovelled, you technically can't eat off of it. But as long as you're in a situation where you can pick it up off of that kli, then you are allowed to eat from it.
Wait.
Uh-oh.
So it all begs the question, how do you know? I mean, it's not like you go to the mikveh and when you're done you get an indelible stamp ink like football players every time they make a touchdown.
Here at the Rabbi Shaya Klimnik Mikveh we have a
okay. I mean, so very interesting questions to discuss and get a better understanding, but at the bottom line, on a day to day.
Well, the answer is in a case that Anne brought up at the beginning. Let's say you have this convention center where you know the owner is someone Jewish, but you know they're not religious at all. You know, everything's treif usually, whatever, but they koshered everything just for you. So they koshered everything, but in all likelihood, they did not tovel their kelim. Because, again, they're required because they're Jewish, but they don't know anything. They usually serve treif. So in that circumstance, and let's say they're the owner of a hotel, so you know that these were not really treated properly, and so in that circumstance, you could be potentially lenient over here. That's, you're right. This is not happening every single day. But nonetheless, it is something that could happen. Yeah, Melissa.
Yeah, that wasn't my question. Also, I was wondering, does that mean, is Rav Moshe saying, because it would be possible to eat this food without a plate, you are allowed to eat it off the plate? Or are you saying, please pick up the steak, and while you're sitting there and everyone's enjoying their nice steak dinner, you are holding the steak and the potato, or you've put it on the table?
So he's not saying you have to take the whole thing off necessarily all at once, but that there is a moment that it's removed from the plate, and that's when you're eating it. So that's why he says, so take a plastic fork, okay, take it out of your pocket.
Soup, no.
Okay, so soup is a very big question now. Let's say you're served soup in a metal bowl. You know the metal bowl is in Tovelt, and hopefully you're not going to, I don't know how you would do that. Maybe, theoretically, if you had a plastic spoon, you'd be okay. But if you just had your...
No.
Sorry?
Yeah. Not only because you're transferring it into the thing, but because I thought it was specifically said like Hatikha Basar, it's because it's a thing that could be lifted out and put on the table.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Yes, but theoretically you could say that if you can lift it up with something like a plastic spoon, maybe
like you're transferring it.
Right, you're transferring it in. Exactly. Yeah.
Why is this a question? The hands don't blow today.
they don't belong to me, but the owner is Jewish and they are obligated to be toveled, right? This is sort of where it gets a little bit unusual, because the food is not kosher. The food is not kosher, but we as Jews are not allowed to eat off of a vessel owned by a Jew that was not toveled.
So if you do, you're not eating treif, but you're violating a prohibition.
Yes, you are violating the prohibition of not toveling a kli that needs to be toveled.
But as long as you have a plastic set of silverware, you're all set.
Yes. That's right. You have one of those, like, you know, like the Swiss Army. Well, Swiss Army, well, that's a metal.
No, I think you're
theoretically, but again, as Joyce was saying, the odds of this happening, where you know that, like, especially in the year 2022, where everything is totally kosher, but the one thing that they forgot to do is the tovel of the kelim. It does not happen very often nowadays. But yes, theoretically, if everything is kosher, right? There are cases where it can happen. Sorry.
I inherited dishes. I make an assumption.
Ah.
That my predecessors took care of
us. Okay, we'll talk about that another time, maybe. but yes, theoretically. Okay, so with all of that said, I do want to sum up, and I want to just talk outside of the source sheets for a few moments. So let's talk about some modern day examples. So the first, going back to the case that we started with of the person yesterday who came over to me and said, I need to go tovel these dishes, and I told them they do not need to be toveled. What needs to be toveled? So very, very simple. Two things and two things only. If it's glass or if it's metal, it has to be toveled. Everything else in the world technically does not need to be toveled. You'll go into some kelim mikvahs, and you even go online, you Google what needs to be toveled. There are lists of, like, every single material known to mankind. Yes, no, 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 yes, yes, right? It's crazy, because you really can't get a sense of what's what. If it's metal, if it's glass, you tovel it. Anything else does not need to be toveled, right? Good? Okay. Okay, good. So then there are these questions of is it glass? Is it not glass? It's a new kind of glass. When it comes to anything, again, I'm the person who doesn't know the difference between the poultry shears and arts and crafts scissor, right? So if it looks like it might be glass, so I always tell people, again, glass and metal is obligated. So I would recommend bringing a couple of forks with it that need to be toveled, metal forks, and tovel them. And when you're toveling that, so you tovel the thing that looks like glass also, right? So here is one really good example of something that I know for sure there are many people out there who make mistakes, and I'll call out my mother-in-law, and I'll tell a story about how she embarrassed me. She embarrassed me. She ends up looking much better than I do in the story. That you're allowed to do. When it comes to aluminum pans, do you have to tovel them? Oh, good. Oh, okay, good. Right, so one-time-use pans, the poskim are very lenient. And they say that since it's a one-time-use pan, it's technically, it is aluminum, but this is not what we really mean as a real kli. It's not a real kli. They throw it out afterwards, so obviously no need to tovel it. However, what's an exception to that rule? If you're a very eco-friendly person, you don't want to throw out all your pans, and you use them again multiple times, so technically, absolutely, you should tovel it. My mother-in-law, she runs a very efficient kitchen, and when she bakes her challah, she often keeps her challah, like, you know, the aluminum pans she bakes the challah in, she keeps them for multiple uses. So one time I said, you know, Safta, technically you really shouldn't be reusing them, and she was very proud, and she said, look inside. What does this say inside the pan? So there are many pans that you can find in the kosher grocery stores, not here, but, you know, other places in the world, where it says, first of all, there's a nice hashkacha there, the OU, the stuck somewhere, right? So it's a kosher aluminum pan. That's good. That it says, lo tzarich tevila. And the reason why is that you don't need tevila. Why not? Made by Jews, right? The nice Jewish Hasidic company made the pans because they knew there were going to be some Jews out there who were not going to want to throw out their one-time use pans, and therefore they cover all their bases. And so she was very proud to say that you're right, dope, you do have to tovel them, but I don't because I have Jewish pants. And so then, so I ended up looking like a fool, and she was 100% correct, as my mother-in-law is always 100% correct. But yeah, theoretically, if you do go to the store, go to Wegmans, you buy a pan, these are not Jewish pans, you cannot really reuse them without toveling them, but you have Rabbi Shaya Kalim Nekele Mikvah, where you can go tovel them if you would like. Okay, let's talk for just 2 moments about electrical appliances. So, does this mean that China dishes? Yes, China dishes do not need to be toveled. There is a question about the glazing on a lot of modern day dishes. Does that require you to do tevila? The answer is no. There are some out there who do have a stringency and say, oh well, because it's kind of like glass, glass coating, maybe you should. But most people assume you don't. Again, if you want to be really strict, I mean, you could take the whole house and just, you know, throw everything into the mikvah for a one time use. Especially if you're here in Rochester, you have the Rabbi Shaya Kalimnik Kalim Mikvah. But as a general rule, no, China does not need to be toveled. Okay, so electrical appliances. Yeah, that's right. I get a nickel every single time. Yeah. For an electrical appliance, so going back to some of the cases we spoke about at the beginning, when it comes to a water urn, again, it's really a basic thing. As long as the coil heating element is dried out after a couple of days, it's fine. So you should tovel that technically. However, there are three major leniencies that I want to share with you. Some that we've already spoken about, some that we haven't yet. So there is an idea, again, that you can technically give it or sell it to a non-Jewish person and borrow it back. So in some circumstances, there are those who say, by the way, this is what a lot of the major Jewish communities did throughout COVID, when you were not able to go to a mikvah, or it was not safe, or there were so many restrictions. So there were major batei din, both in Chicago and in New York, that actually collected information, and just like from people all around the country and the world, and just like there are people who sell their chametz, so they had mass sellings of dishes and pots and pans to non-Jewish people, and then at some point they, I guess, bought them back, and then they had to go tovel them at a later date. So technically you can sell an electrical appliance to someone who's not Jewish and then borrow it back. You wouldn't have to tovel it. There are those who say that because your electrical appliance is a mechubar lakarka, it's attached to the ground, what that means is that I cannot use my Keurig machine if it's not plugged in. Right? By definition, it has to be plugged in, so that's something considered connected to the ground. Something that is connected to the ground. What was it called?
Yeah. Electric to the ground,
obviously. Yes, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
No, physically, not just electrically grounded, it's physically connected to
the electrical ground. Wires are connected to the physical.
Yes, 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 yes. Right. Theoretically, let's say someone has like a really big battery pack. That could be an interesting question. But as a general rule, right, no one would even ask if they have to tovel their like giant oven, right? Because why? Because that's 100% mechubar lakarka. It's attached to the ground in more ways than one, and so therefore no need to tovel that. There is a question, by the way, about the racks in your oven. And really what it comes down to is that since those are removable, if one were to put food directly on it, which people usually don't, but if you did, there is a bit of a question about that. Feel free to ask about that privately afterwards if you have any. This is also a really big thing in microwaves. So a lot of microwaves, again, the device itself does not need to be toveled, but there's that little glass dish that turns around. So people a lot of times, you know, have a frozen bagel or something in the freezer, throw it in the microwave, and just, you know, they don't need a plate, just throw it on the glass dish. So if you do that, which again, a lot of people do, you do have to tovel that glass dish in that circumstance. But so some larger electrical appliances, So there are those who say that none of them need to be toveled because they're attached to the ground. And then there is another leniency given by Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in which he says that what's the whole reason why you have to tovel anything? Because it was made by someone who was not Jewish. Right, but we're sophisticated individuals. We all see those screws at different points in the device. All you do is take a screwdriver, undo them a little bit, take a few pieces off, and then put it back together. And then who made it?
The
A Jewish person. And so there are those who say when it comes to these types of larger electrical appliances that might need to be toveled, well, if you just take it apart and put it back together, that technically could work. There are those who explain that you would really have to properly take it apart, and if you really properly take it apart, then you probably will not be able to put it back together. But if you are someone who can do that, then theoretically that is an option as well. With that, I think that's sort of a more or less the all-encompassing approach to electrical appliances. Any questions?
Susie has a question.
Yes.
No, Susie Stein has a question.
I koshered my mom's silverware, but it also needs... So theoretically, if you have every reason to assume that she did not tovel it, then theoretically you should tovel it, yeah. Unless you, again, there is a chance, I don't know the whole circumstance, feel free to ask me offline as well, but it could be that, you know, she purchased it from like a Jewish merchant who made it himself, but assuming it wasn't, then yeah, you would have to tovel it, yeah.
Oh, okay, I mean, it was with, I did this with Rabbi Kay, and of course it was not in a kosher home, and it was not toveled, but it was koshered, with tevila, with water.
Right. But
at KI, not at KI yet. At Beth Shalom.
Yeah. If Rabbi Kalimnik said it was okay, then I don't want to. Certainly don't want to disagree with him, and we'll stop there. But if you have any further questions, feel free to ask me offline. Yeah, Melissa.
So since the issue is who made it, if you had a department store that was owned by a Jew, but they're not making the stuff that's there, right? Like my impression is that the Christmas tree shop is actually owned by an Israeli guy. So if
Sounds
you have
right.
a store that's owned by somebody Jewish, but the stuff there is just whatever things, you still need to total it because it's who made it, not who's selling it.
Well, right. So if the Israeli guy is the manufacturer of these things, then theoretically you might not need to. But my understanding is that they buy the things already made.
Correct.
Yeah. So if someone
company making stuff, the store acquires, the Jewish owner of the store acquires them to sell.
Yeah.
You would still need to because they're not making.
Yeah.
It. Okay.
Yeah.
So if the issue is, if one of the issues whether it has to be total or not is whether it is the fact that it's going to be used for food, food's going to be placed directly on it, then to take your bread and baker example, wouldn't you have to total only the pan inside?
Ah, so that's what I did. And the Rabbi Shaya Kalim Nikila Mikvah, when we got our new bread maker a few weeks ago. Yeah, so there's like this like inside thing insert that comes out. So we just toveled that, and there's like a little mixer thing. That's all we toveled. Yeah, 100%.
So yeah. What about Teflon coated pans? I mean, that's what you get all these days. They're not metal. The metal itself doesn't touch the food. It's the Teflon coating.
What does that mean?
Pan, a saucepan, let's say.
Yeah.
It's a metal pan, but it's coated with Teflon.
You're saying
inside.
It's yeah, but
Teflon.
Right, but
metal doesn't touch the food.
But they're not using Teflon so much anymore.
Wait one second. Wait. This is interesting. So the coating inside is it really like
it's
separating?
Coating, let's say.
Okay. So you would have to assume that at the end of the day that would be considered like tuffel, like sort of negligent in comparison to the rest of the object. At the end of the day, it is a metal pan, right? If it was not a metal pan, then you wouldn't be cooking on a fire with it. So at the end of the day, you should total that, yeah.
Like something like the KitchenAid big mixer.
Yeah.
Or a George Foreman grill
yeah.
that has removable plates.
Yeah.
All you would need to do is take out the plates.
Right, 100%.
And
so
the mixer, you'd only need to
the blades.
Total the blades and the container.
Yeah. So right. If you have a big electrical appliance like a food processor or whatever, and all the parts that are touching the food that are metal are removable, like the blades or whatever, absolutely you should take those out and total them. Yep, 100%. Yep.
So you said the mikvah's open
24/6.
How do you get in there? Is there a code?
Okay, so we'll turn the recorder off and I'll tell everyone.